Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Happy spring bank holiday, everybody, and welcome along to the Full Throttle Bike Racing Podcast from Eurosport. This is Monday, the 31st of May, 2021. Greg Haynes with you, and I've literally just come off air with co-commentator James Whittam. Hello, James.
Hi, Greg.
And that was our commentary for the weekend on Estoril World Superbikes, and not quite what I expected, I have to say. What about you?
No, definitely not. Going into this meeting, we expected Jonathan Rea and the KRT team to struggle. We expected Scott Redding to be quick. We expected Chas Davies to be quick. Some of that happened and some didn't. The main thing was Kawasaki and Jonathan Rea definitely found something. Whether it's a new bike, the new aerodynamic element to the new ZXN Kawasaki, or whether it's setup changes or just really good management like it always is with the Kawasaki racing team, they made definitely steps forward and looked pretty competitive from the word go, and it's been a good meeting for them when they didn't really expect it, I think.
Yeah, Estoril 2020, of course, ended the season back in October. It also must be added that Jonathan Rea had the championship on his mind at that point. That was the target from that weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they struggled for time all weekend.
They did, and Jonathan made an uncharacteristic error in that last race, didn't he, last year when he hit Toprak at turn three. But then this year, they've gone to Estoril, and look what happens. I mean, I was expecting at least two wins from Toprak Razgatlioglu, if not a treble. And Yamaha have come out of there with no win. I'm surprised, I have to say, I'm surprised.
Yeah, I don't think that was any reflection on the competitiveness of the Yamaha or the competitiveness of their number one rider, Toprak Razgatlioglu. I think they both, the Yamaha and Toprak, had the pace and the wherewithal to win races this weekend or at least go with Jonathan Rea. But actually, bad luck. I mean, it just didn't work out for them. A little bit unlucky through qualifying and really, really unlucky to have jumped the start. I mean, it was all Toprak's work. You can't really blame anybody else when you jump the start, but it's easy done these days. It's not a case of somebody standing looking at each row with a flag like it used to be in the old days. This is electronic equipment. If you move before the lights change, you will be penalised. What I will say is he did a damn good job of doing the two-lap long lap penalty, the two-lap long lap penalty. Only dropped, what, about 4.5 or 5 seconds in the whole two?
Yeah.
Like, it's just incredible. And it's dusty out there, and he could have easily slid off. It's the first time you try it, really. And he did a good job of it, I think. Damage limitation was brilliant.
Damage limitation, absolutely the phrase. We said how dusty it was off the line and even on the line on Friday morning practice on our coverage, didn't we? And then again, we saw this afternoon as we record this, in the last hour or so, Scott Redding, how dusty it was offline when he was attacking Jonathan Rea, and down she went.
Yeah, he was offline to the inside, which generally means it isn't as dusty as offline outside, because all the dust that gets on the track gets thrown out wide. It goes on the outside of the corners because of the bikes going round. But yeah, he definitely got off the racing line. He was tight on the inside, lost the front end. Desperately unlucky for Scott. He did have a go at saving it. It went and then he picked it up and then it went again. So really, really unlucky. He hasn't had a bad meeting, but when Jonathan Rea, his main title rival, has the meeting that he's had, it seems like a bad meeting. But, you know, he's won a race, which would be good, but he's dropped points and dropped a position in the championship. So he's... bad weekend for the factory Ducati team, actually.
the more times I see it, the more times I'm convinced of it. We're just watching our screens here in our commentary box. We can see the world feed from Dorna. We can see the Eurosport output, which is Matt and Shaky and James Hayden in the studio. And now they're doing the post-race show as we record this podcast. Reading moved on the grid. He moved because Toprak moved, didn't he? Which resulted in a wonderful start for Scott Redding because he went on time.
Absolutely. You couldn't have got a better start because actually he went not on the lights. He went because Toprak went. He saw Toprak move. He released the clutch off. He went, didn't look back. Toprak actually went, stopped and then went. So ironically, Toprak made a really bad start, but yet got a jump start penalty, which was fair enough. So Scott kind of benefited from Toprak having a little bit of a jump start.
Back to Estoril today. Yeah, missed opportunity, I think, for pretty much anybody, everybody, if your name's not Jonathan Rea.
Yeah, typical case of Jonathan Rea and the KRT team and Pereira doing exactly the right job, just making all the right decisions, just going efficiently about the business like they do. Generally don't drop the ball, and they didn't this weekend. And it's, for me, it's up to everybody else to raise the game and catch up with Jonathan. Less pressure on him. They know what they can do. They go out and do the job. If they can't win, they finish second. They don't crash trying to win. And it's, I'm saying that from a nice, comfy, you know, commentary booth. And it's easy for me to say that. And when you're on the spot, it's really, really difficult. But still, they go about their business and everybody else has to raise the game. That's just how it is. You can't penalise somebody, either a team or a rider, for being good.
We'll hear from Jonathan Rea a little bit later in the podcast. But first of all, let's listen in to Toprak Razgatlioglu with Charlie Hiscott after this afternoon's final race of the weekend.
Toprak, a very busy race for you, but you still managed to get on the podium. That's a positive thing, isn't it?
A very strange start, and I'm very surprised because first time I'm feeling this one. And I'm very sorry, my team. Because this race, maybe I'm possible win, but strange start, two double long lap, but I'm again podium. I'm happy, but very difficult weekend for me, and we will see next race. Yeah.
How do you feel about going to Misano now?
I like it Misano because I go 2 days test, also feeling very good, and also lap time is very good. I'm feeling positive, but we will see in the race.
Hey, well done, Toprak.
Thank you. See you.
Yeah, what can you say? I mean, it was his mistake. He knew he'd get that double long lap penalty, although he was pushing on at that point, wasn't he? Yeah. He was pushing Scott Redding for the lead at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we knew going into this meeting that Toprak was going to be one of the men to beat, or at least one of the men to run right at the front. We know how aggressive he is. We know how much he likes to win. I actually thought that this weekend he's displayed some real kind of maturity and thought for championship, not just thought for race,
yes.
I thought.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And you wouldn't have heard Toprak saying that a couple of years ago, but he's always talking about points now and the championship. So well done to Toprak. You have to say, it's been a disappointing weekend in a way, but he certainly made a lot of progress with his crew chief, Phil Maron. Now, let's just go back to qualifying. And I think something that did change the weekend for Toprak, and we said it on air as well, is that he exceeded track limits for the second time in a week in a Super Pole session. That was coming out of the last corner, and he lost his first run. So that put him down to 19th position. They come in the pits, they go back out, put the qualifying tyres on. I think Toprak could and would have pushed harder had he not been 19th, and potentially could have been on pole position. Who knows how that could have changed the races.
Yeah, the problem is, if you don't put what's known in the trade as a banker, you don't bank a lap early on with the pre-qualifier, the soft-ish tyre, well, then you've more pressure not to fail or muck up or make a mistake when you've got the qualifier. And there's a whole lot of pressure involved in that in itself. So I think you're dead right. Toprak, having only qualified 19th because having his next best lap disqualified, had to get the lap in with a tyre that would only do one lap, remember? Couldn't have a second go at it. So he made double safe, and that cost him a little bit of time just from being safe.
Yes, he qualified fourth, but ended up third. And remember, those grid positions are for the first two races. So those less than 2 minutes laps in qualifying are absolutely pivotal for a race weekend.
Yeah,
they really are, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it's been like this ever since the three-race format came in at the start of 2019. Now, the reason he was promoted is that six riders had their best times removed. And now this is a new regulation, isn't it? If a yellow flag comes out in qualifying now, those laps are immediately deleted. So almost the entire field, at least half the field, had their best lap times taken away on their only lap on the qualifying tyre taken away. Alex Lowes was one of them. He lost his position on the front row, ended up 10th. Luca Mayes, Chaz Davis, Eugene Laverty, he lost a good row three position. Bassani was one of them, and I'm forgetting somebody, but there was another one in there as well. What's your take on that rule? Should the lap, or the sector, and therefore the whole lap, instantly be deleted by default if there's a yellow flag, or should it be assessed individually each time?
Right, a little bit of background here. What happens is, when you're out on your bike, you are communicated with by the use of flags. If the yellow flag's out, it means there's been an incident in that sector of the track.
Yes.
Right, all riders know that.
And they get the flashing yellow lights on the dash, don't they?
Yeah, in a race position, in a race situation, you are allowed to go past it. You'd have to stop. You'd have to pull into the pits, but you can go past that sector, but you're not allowed to pass. Right? In practice or qualifying, the procedure was you had to slow down and respect the flag. Because, let's face it, under yellow flag conditions, there could be a rider lane at the side of the track being attended to. There could be marshals running over into a position of danger to attend to a fallen rider, pick a bike up, etc. There could also be dust on the track, oil on the track, petrol on the track, whatever. So you've got to respect the yellow flag. So people weren't respecting the yellow flag in qualifying, because if you're on your qualifying tyre, you only have one lap. So what do? If you look ahead, you see the yellow flags. As the crash, as the fallen rider slid off the track, yes, he has, I'll just keep my head down. So to stop that happening and making a bad situation worse, the organisers said that, look, under yellow flag conditions, that lap, the yellow flag lap, will be, for everybody that passes that yellow flag, will be deleted. Once the yellow flags are in, then anybody else that comes past isn't deleted a lap. The fact is, in this case, the riders that came past, you said Lowes, Bassani, Laverty, all
Davis, Mayes,
all went past with their qualifying tyre on. They were just starting their one and only possibility of a fast lap.
And I would just add, Chaz Davis did roll off the throttle.
Yeah.
Slowed down.
Yeah, but nevertheless, the new rule says they get that lap docked. And so those riders had to get put back. The fact was that the yellow flag was out, not for a crash, not for anybody lying at the side of the track, but for Tito Rabat, who'd gone straight on trying to keep up with a fast lap being put in by Scott Redding, ran off the track, ran across the gravel, didn't crash, and was actually, by the time the yellow flags were out, he'd gone across the gravel and was against the barrier and running around what was the very outside of what you would call the perimeter of the track. So no immediate danger.
Outside the firing line.
Outside the firing line, in effect. Yes, Greg.
Yeah.
So should there have been some, what's the word? Judgment displayed by the stewards, and in this case, not dock those laps. I don't know. Rules are rules, and you've got to respect the yellow flags. It's a safety thing, and I agree you should respect the yellow flag. But it seemed to be fairly harsh on the people who were dock laps, because they only had one go. And bear in mind, they didn't have time or a second qualifying tyre to have another go. So it seemed fairly harsh on them.
And like you say,
for me, the obvious answer to this is either it's arbitrary on the decision of the judges, the stewards, as to whether to dock time. In this case, they shouldn't have, in my opinion, or to just not have qualifying tyres, then thereby allowing the riders that have the lap docked to have another go on the softer tyre, but not the qualifier that they haven't got a second one off.
Yeah, and this is where commercial interests come into the equation as well,
yeah.
Because Pirelli is not only the sole tyre supplier, but they're also a championship sponsor. They like to set lap times. They like to demonstrate how good their products are,
yep,
for track days, so on and so forth, as you know full well.
Yep.
Just checking my notes, Bautista was the other one.
Yep.
Laverty, Bassani, Mayes, Davis, Bautista and Lowes. Now, there are rider briefings, of course, at the start of each race weekend, and you do feel that that will be discussed, don't you, at Misano?
Well, I think it has been discussed. They all know that rule. In fact, Charlie out there on the grid spoke to Alex Lowes for race one, and Alex Lowes said, look, I'm not arguing with it at all. Rules are rules, he says, but, you know, it wasn't much of an incident to have the yellow flags out for anyway.
Yeah.
But he says, rules are rules, and I abide by them. So, you know, they would know, but they will, I am sure this will come up within the paddock And certainly the riders will discuss it between themselves.
Yeah, and I think what Alex Lowe's and all those other riders were most annoyed about is, okay, we were unlucky, but the penalty came quite late, didn't it? It took race direction, or sorry, the stewards panel, quite some time to announce that. You know, Alex Lowe's had already gone through Parc Fermé, been interviewed as a top three finisher, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm 10th now.
Yeah, but the time doesn't matter.
Mm. You know, they need time to assess it, I suppose, don't they?
Yeah, they do. When what difference does it make?
Yeah.
In fact, you'd think being a late declaration of those would give Alex a little bit more time to be happy because he didn't know. You know what I mean?
That's true.
The time doesn't make a lot of difference to me.
Yeah, it was definitely a talking point. I'm sure we'll continue as a talking point for quite some time. But we've seen everything, haven't we, this weekend? Yellow flag infringements, jump starts, collisions. We've seen some collisions. Let's just recap. Garrett Gerloff, of course, this is the Texan, the GRT Yamaha rider. Great rider. We love the guy. He's definitely going places. Future world champion, I think. But let's see what's happened already this year. The sprint race, unseen by the TV cameras at Aragon a couple of weekends ago, he apparently drifted across the front of Luca Mias, took his front wheel. Mias crashed coming out of the corkscrew. We all saw what happened with Jonathan Rea in the long race. Come to Estoril this weekend. We saw him going underneath Michael Rinaldi at the Interior Parabolica in race one, sat him up. You said it was hard but fair, to be honest. And then, this afternoon, Rinaldi had sat up Jonathan Rea at the VIP corner. And just a few seconds later, boom, massive impact. Gerloff missed his breaking point, didn't he? And wiped Rinaldi clean out. Nasty accident.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Rinaldi didn't know, bless him, didn't know what the heck had happened. Got to feel a little bit sorry for Garrett Gerloff in this instance because he was unsighted by Toprak going up the inside of Rinaldi and kind of just got his eye off the ball, braked slightly late. And what people don't understand, especially non-motorcyclists don't understand, when you hit that brake, it's your braking late. Your braking mark is the latest you can possibly brake for that corner, right? So you're on the limit. So once it starts going wrong, you can't just pull the lever any harder and get out of the situation. You're kind of committed, you know. And he's left his braking late. He was heading for the back of the back of Rinaldi. Sometimes you can let the brake off and thereby get steering back and then dodge out the back of the way of the back of the rider in front. But in this case, he had no choice but to cannon into the back of Rinaldi and knock him down. It was 100% Garrett Gerloff's fault. However, the punishment definitely didn't fit the crime. He didn't do a lot wrong. And like I said, when he took Jonathan Rea wide and knocked Jonathan Rea off the track and himself crashed, Garrett Gerloff apologised and Jonathan Rea took it on the chin. This is all that arrogant. You've got to take it on the chin because it wasn't that long ago since we saw 2019 that we saw Jonathan Rea hit at Jerez. Alex Lowe's.
Yeah.
Last corner. And that was his fault. So you've got to forgive the rider. We've all done it and we've all had it done to us. However, when it's the same rider doing it week in, week out to various people, then maybe there's an issue. But you've got to feel sorry for Garrett. It was a tiny, tiny mistake.
What I would say, not so much in his defence, because obviously these are mistakes, like you say, but all the great champions, actually, pretty much all of them, have done things like this in their earlier formative years, haven't they? You know, when you look back through the archives.
It's a sort of byproduct of somebody wanting to do well and being prepared to push their and the bike's limits and take risks. And I'm not condoning what he did, but there's a certain respect you've got to give somebody who will just tweak with the limits at times.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you don't get away with it.
The others are obviously getting a bit concerning, pretty angry about it. There was also the incident with the BMWs, which again was just a racing incident, I think, at Magny-Cours last year, Laverty and Sykes. Anyway, we've heard from Toprak Razgatioglu. Let's hear from Chas Davies, because it's been a really encouraging afternoon for Chas and the Go 11 team. And what a ride up is through the field as well.
All right, well, the man who pushed him hardest in the end, the last few laps of that race, was Chas Davies, and he joins us now from Estoril. The eyes are smiling. Chas, you must be well happy with that. Back on the podium, been a little while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, there's only a couple of races passed, but Estoril 2020 seems like a long time ago. So now, great to be great to be up here. Obviously, it's been a topsy-turvy weekend and a few difficulties along the way, but to finish it like this is probably better than I could have hoped for after yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, you've been a bit unlucky, haven't you, the first couple of rounds, but it seems that the team have really gelled, Chaz, and there's a good bond there. Like, it looks like you've got a nice atmosphere, the kind of place that you're going to be happy working, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't fault the team at all. I've moved across. Obviously, we're on the same bike, but a different group of people as well. And everybody's just getting on like a house on fire. Not that they weren't last year. It's just a different atmosphere, obviously, in a team where maybe the expectation every weekend is a little bit less than the factory one. So, everybody's having a mucking about, but also getting some results along the way. So, no, very happy. Like you said, we've been a little bit unlucky, I think, so far, but this is racing and we've got a long season ahead of us.
Chaz, how much do you think or how much input have you had in the development of the bike over the winter, bearing in mind that, you know, you've stepped aside from the factory team into the Go 11 team? Are they still asking your opinions on the bike? Are you still driving it forward?
Well, being honest, the winter sort of development is, you know, there's not been an awful lot brought. There's a couple of things that maybe didn't work for each of us, for the, you know, myself and the two factory riders. So the base of the bike that we have now is basically what we finished on at the end of last year, with a little upgrade of exhaust and a couple other things. But obviously, the engineers are listening to us riders, and they're still valuing my input. But obviously, it's difficult to get sometimes to work in the areas that we want. Difficult to find the improvements. So our weak spots remain our weak spots, and they've been the same ones for quite a while. And it's we were hoping to address them this winter, and, you know, nothing seemed to work. So you know, the bike's good, but we do struggle in certain spots, in certain corners. You know, I think you've probably heard Scott talk about long corners, and that was no different today. You know, following Johnny through the last corner and out of turn 10. It was clear where they were able to gap us. And likewise, it was clear where our strong points are as well. But we just got to try and limit the damage a bit.
Chaz, 99 podiums. I mean, what a record that is in World Superbike. So congratulations. Now, one of the, obviously, both a bit unlucky here and in Aragon, you had to miss nearly a session with the bike. And with reduced time, that's probably costing you. Because, again, one of the things is you've had to come through a lot of the field, you know, to get through to where you are. You've had the pace, but you've had to come from too far back. Obviously, for today's race, you know, it came from Super Pole race, which helped you a lot. But is that somewhere you're still going to be looking at to try and improve going forward?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing is that they're going to address the yellow flag single lap or lap cancellation with qualifying tyres. I think they're already working on that, so we should have a different rule for Misano, hopefully, so nobody gets caught out again. But yeah, like you said, the job gets a lot easier when you start in their first three rows. That's what we did today. Was able to get a reasonable start and get in the thick of it with the right people in the beginning, kind of go whereas those gaps get created. You start in P15, and those gaps get created. Little, you know, there's a bit of bar banging going on. You get the gap gets the group gets splintered, and next thing you know, you're 2 seconds off the back of the next group, which is 2 seconds off the back of the front group. So that just calms down the further you start to the front. I know I'm telling two ex racers here or current shaky, but.
I'm an armchair racer at the minute, Chaz.
No, but it does make the job a lot easier starting at the front and getting that sucked along by them guys.
Tell me about it, Chaz. Tell me about it. You got the 100 podiums T-shirt ready for Misano then, mate? Yeah.
No, in a word, no. I didn't even know, but thanks for the stat, James. No, it's obviously something I'm super proud of. You told me that age, you know, 7, 8, 10, I'd have laughed at you. So, no, pretty cool.
Good stuff. Well, that gives you something to do over the next week anyway, Chaz, and with your duties at home as well. So we'll leave you to it. Thanks for joining us and well done today.
Well done.
Well done, Chaz.
Thanks very much. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, so unlike Luca Myers, who'd actually put in a good banker lap on the... on the X tyre before having that Q tyre lap removed. It still left him up there on row two in the end. Chas Davis was not much further back, wasn't he? To 15th on the grid, fourth up, first two races, then had a row three starting position in race two and ends up second. I mean, he loves Estoril, as we know, and it's great to see Chas feeling so confident with the Go 11 team.
Yeah, loves the team. Really salvaged something from what was a mediocre meeting for him, I think. But great to see Chas smiling because we like him.
Mm. Now, let's also listen to Scott Redding. We've not heard what Scott Redding had to say yet, but the interviews were carried out with the Dorna guys after the race.
Scott Redding, obviously a very difficult day here with what happened in race two. We saw you hit the front early, but then, of course, that crash at turn four. Tell us a bit about your race until that crash.
Yeah, I felt pretty good. I was got a good start, almost a jump start. I think the light like dipped a little bit before we started because I saw Top Rack and I would just squeeze the front brakes. I didn't want the jump start. Then I was kind of thinking, am I going to get a ride through or penalty? So for two, three laps in my mind, I was not really focused, but I was up front doing my own thing, feeling quite good, feeling comfortable and kind of managing the gap. I was happy with the pace I was doing. I was trying to conserve the tyre and I felt like I was riding really well. But then when Jonathan was closing the gap to me again, I was having a few issues with the front tyre and I shouldn't have really tried to attack so soon. I needed the tyre to settle a little bit then go again at the end. But we're here racing, we're here to try and win. And, you know, we was fighting for the win and I just pushed a bit too hard when the tyre wasn't in a good condition. And I lost the front and, yeah, cost me a lot of points today. I'm very upset with myself because it was my own fault on going too early. So I'm very sorry to all my team and I want to bounce back in Misano.
We've seen you here in both races hit the front really early and try and manage also that tyre, manage that gap. Do you think you would have been able to, you know, considering the temperatures that we had here today?
Well, that's what kind of has upset me the most is when I see the lap times, I had that in my pocket all day long. Like, I don't know if Jonathan had more, but, you know, I know Chas was kind of closing the gap a little bit and he wasn't responding, so I believe I could have won that today. That really has upset me. Even when I got back on and I had no foot peg on the left and a bent left handlebar, which was really awkward to ride, I still put in a 37.9. So I knew I had the pace to win today. My mistake, I threw it away and I'm just very sorry.
So a long championship ahead. Next up is Misano, a home race, a very important race for Ducati. You have tested there on the V4R. How do you feel going into there now?
Yeah, I feel quite good in Misano, but we've always been there in the cold, so it's completely different. The good thing is home circuit for the team and for Ducati, which is cool. We'll try and hit the top step of the podium there, keep fighting, and just keep trying to win. That's all we can do.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
Let's just focus on tyres, James, because we saw a big difference in tyres, and it just seems as though Redding and Ducati are a bit confused at the moment, whether they use the X compound tyre in the long race or how can Jonathan Rea make the zero last in the sprint race and things like that.
That's the whole thing. It's not just Scott Redding that's saying that. We heard Chas Davis say that after the race as well. He says we're missing something because he says, you know, the Kawasaki team and especially Jonathan can make that zero tyre work in the short races and make it last in the longer races. And he said, you know, given the same choice again for me, I'd have still chosen the X tyre to go against Johnny in the longer races, knowing that Johnny takes a zero, but knowing that also I can't make it work as well as he can. So, like we've said, it's everybody else's, you know, job to whatever, through setup changes or through management of by the rider to make that either the zero give the grip early on or the X go for a longer distance. It's it's theirs to do.
How crushing a blow, though, was what happened on Sunday afternoon at Estoril 2021 for Ducati and for Scott Redding. Psychologically, that one must be tough to take.
Yeah, they absolutely had the wherewithal to come away from Estoril with a small deficit in the championship. Maybe 7 or 8 points were worked out, didn't we?
I have to be honest, I thought Redding was going to come out of Estoril as the championship leader after what we saw on Saturday.
Now he, I believe he's, what, 36 points behind and in third place in the championship?
Yeah, he's certainly more than a race win behind it, something like that, wasn't it? Yeah, you'll have to forgive us. We've only just come off ahead.
They've, in terms of the championship, Ducati and Scott have had a really difficult meeting. The job's not over. Shorty's got the pace. And I think what he will be encouraged about is he finally, in race one of the weekend, made, on completely equal terms, made that X tyre work and had an impressive win. And I think at Aragon, he had a win with the slicks on when everybody else had intermediates. And he won't see that as a level playing field win on track. He'll see that as an inspired tyre choice and that gave him a slight advantage on track. Not here in race one at Estoril. That was definitely Scott Redding putting one across everybody on absolutely equal terms.
Okay, let's get some words now from Jonathan Ray. Before we do, actually, let's quickly talk about Supersport, because very emotional afternoon in the World Supersport Championship. First of all, Steve Odendaal makes it 3 out of 3 on Saturday, 75 points from 75 points. What a race, though, on Sunday. It was good old Supersport, wasn't it? Crashes galore. Nobody hurt, thankfully, but crashes, overtaking, a new winner. It doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't. Absolutely brilliant racing. For us, we've got us favourites. Doesn't really matter who wins, because the racing was absolutely cracking. Both to watch as a bystander and to commentate on, it was brilliant. I love the Supersport class. Really disappointed that the class, in terms of, you know, nobody building 600 sports bikes, so therefore people are saying that something's going to have to happen, the class is dying. But when you get racing like that, it's difficult to accept that, because it was just brilliant.
Prizes as well. Raffaele De Rosa was just over 2 laps away from his first ever win, and he crashes. Joel Cluzel crashes. Two experienced guys crashing. Yeah. Odendaal with a problem. We don't still know at this point, as we record, what happened. Did he run out of fuel, I wonder?
Yeah, it's the obvious. I mean, last lap. Back starts conking out, but just about limps round to the finish. You've got to think fuel. You know, I think maybe not. I don't know. It could be a fuel pump problem, a wiring problem. Certainly, there was no smoke or flames or oil coming out of the bikes. So it wasn't a massive mechanical problem, but it could be anything else. It could be, you know, it could be. Who knows? He might have tickled and bent a valve and he's lost a cylinder or whatever. We don't know. But yeah, I mean, if I had to put my house on it, and it's not an expensive house, I would put it on run out of fuel. Yeah.
Right. By the time you hear the next podcast, James might be living in a Linton Travel Tavern, Alan Partridge style.
I'll have done worse.
His hat, that's true. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Let's listen to Jonathan Ray, though, because it has been a hell of a weekend for Jonathan and for Kawasaki. From 6 races now this year, he's won 2 at Aragon, the long race and a sprint race. And then today he's done the double sprint race, long race, increases the championship lead at Estoril as well.
Another excellent performance, Jonathan. How was it out there?
Yeah, mate, thank you very much. It was good. I got a little bit hassled in the start. I'm in a good getaway, to be honest, but Redding got a steamer of a start. And I thought, oh no, track position's gone again. And then I got beaten up a little bit in the first lap. I got hit by one of the wings of Rinaldi, but no biggie, you know. I just settled into my rhythm. Eugene came past as well, but I could, when I got back in third, I could see the pace of the front wasn't going away so much. I knew they had the SCX tyre, I had the harder tyre, and I knew that I didn't actually know anything, to be honest. I just kept going. I thought, if I can be there, there might be a crossover in the race where I can come back to them. And it was. I was catching Scott quite quickly, especially in sector 2, 3, and 4. And then, I plotted a move in T1. He came back. I went again in T3, and I felt him cut back into T4, and then next thing I see Scott out. So, yeah, sorry for him for that, because it was a nice little battle for him, a few corners. So, great weekend for me. I've been useless here last year, but a real sour taste in my mouth after the news earlier of, Jason, that's terrible. So, still want to dedicate that one to his family and give them strength at this time.
It was interesting when you came in and greeted your mechanics and said that, we won in Estoril. That must feel good.
I thought, not if we can extend our lead here, but if we can still come away with a championship lead, that's a solid weekend. But I really didn't expect to win here. Perry just said that it's probably the best we've, not the best I've ridden, but the best we've worked. You know, every step was positive in the right direction. Tire choices were spot on, even though it was going against the majority. So I think we have to be proud of ourselves and deserve a beer later.
Do you hear the Jaws music when you're coming up behind Redding like that? Because we're all in the press office, we do.
No, but when I was there, I knew when he wasn't going away. I mean, I think the SAX tire, the strategy should be to go away at the start because at some point it's going to drop off. Them guys couldn't get the zero to actually be fast to work where I was able to get that to work. And I think this weekend proved it just has a little bit more life. You know, I could see actually Chaz in the end was quite strong. The gap was there. So that kept me honest to the last laps and I enjoyed it, to be fair. It was a nice weekend.
Fantastic ride, Jonathan.
Thanks, Charlie.
Very emotional, though, and a real somber mood in the paddock, not least because Dominic Agata won for Switzerland the Supersport race. But as Jonathan Ray said there, James, it's been a dreadful weekend for motorcycle racing all round, hasn't it, after the terrible news on Sunday morning that following a very nasty accident in the Moto3 World Championship at Mugello on Saturday, the 19-year-old Jason Dupasquier, the Swiss rider, has lost his life. Now, unfortunately, we know that this is something that can happen. It does happen. It's happened before. You would be perhaps a little bit silly for saying it won't ever happen again. Motorcycle racing, inherently dangerous. First of all, the fact that we've lost a 19-year-old up-and-coming talent, a former champion in the Dutch Series, James, a Red Bull rookie, a very promising rider who scored points already this year in the Moto3 World Championship. Dreadful, dreadful loss.
Yeah, it's a dreadful loss. I mean, we've got to think about his family and his team, but it's inherently a dangerous sport. And we're talking about Moto3 here, but these things are still capable of best about 140 miles an hour with the right gearing on. And, you know, there's an inherent danger. We've made massive strides in terms of circuit safety and rider safety. We've got airbag suits, which are now compulsory in some championships, including MotoGP. We've got loads of runoff. We've got air fencing. We've got huge improvements in medical facilities at the circuits and medical backup. But it still is a dangerous sport. Any time you're doing, not just with motorcycles, if you're doing, you know, best part of 200 miles an hour, there's a danger, whether you're in a car or you're on a bike or whatever, a boat, whatever. It's part of the sport. You know it as you get into the sport. And if you don't want to accept it, you have to do another sport. And you know, it's just desperately sad when it happens. It really is.
Without going into detail in this particular accident for obvious reasons, it's proven again that the main danger in bike racing in particular, unlike in days gone by when they'd go to places like Salzburgring or Spa and there was telegraph poles and barns and houses and parked vehicles or whatever all around the outside of the circuit, curbs, the main danger always will be now, whether you're racing at Cadwell Park or Estoril or even Qatar, which has the most enormous runoff areas in the world, the main danger is going to be being collected by either your own or somebody else's motorcycle.
Yeah,
can happen anywhere.
The main danger always used to be in the old days, you ran off the track or slid off the track after a crash and you hit something solid that wasn't going to move. These days, by far, the main danger is being hit by another bike or even your own bike. And you can minimise the risks, but you know, bike racing and other sports has an inherent danger, and sometimes it's a cruel sport.
Yeah, and thankfully, I think we can at least say to ourselves, thank you again to all of the people involved in improving the safety of our sport, because it has come on
leaps and bounds, unbelievable
leaps and bounds over the years. You know, the way circuits have been improved and medical facilities and. But yes, of course, very much our thoughts this week and for the rest of the year will be with Jason Dupasquier's family and friends. In the end, a tragic weekend following the news from the Mugello Moto3 paddock. Jason Dupasquier, the 19-year-old, all of our thoughts with his family and friends this week and for the whole of the rest of the 2021 season. The podcast will return next Monday, the 7th of June. But for now, let's just take some time to remember the 19-year-old Jason Dupasquier. Our thoughts are with him.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.